Chub Step.
Creating the OIF Dungeon.
Steed.
Chub Step.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the King of the Jungle.
I don't think you should be butting in when I'm talking to my team. You're my assistant, okay? You're supposed to back me up and go get me juice boxes when I tell you. Now go get me a juice box.
You know who you're talking to?
I'm talking to the juice box guy.
You're crazy.
I'm not crazy.
I'm just thirsty. Why don't you go to hell?
No, you go to hell. While you're there, why don't you grab me a juice box?
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
And the show started.
Oh, wow. Wow. We're just going.
Yeah, we're just going, Steve.
12 minutes. 12 minutes late. 13 minutes late. All right. We're doing this. Big show. Big show. Great show. Huge show. Me and Jay are back. Haven't been back in a while.
And your mustache is back.
Mustache is back in full force, baby. Actually, not full force, because I haven't had to trim it off of, like, going into my mouth yet.
Yes.
Because it grows down.
Gross. Yeah.
It grows down aggressively, but...
Well, they typically do grow down and not up, if that was the other alternative.
Well, I was hoping it would just, like, grow out.
Oh, just, like, straight out? I've never seen that. Somebody just a mustache that just grows.
Yeah, if I could, you know, shape it. Maybe get some gel of some sort.
Yeah, get some... Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, Steve, you've been off a few weeks. We told the story of... Dr. Daniel having an orgy in his house.
Yep, and he invited me to just the one in his apartment.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Not the house one.
Oh, that's a bummer. Because he wasn't even invited to the one in his house one.
Yeah.
And then last week, I talked to Big Money Banks, and we talked about cars. And the worst cars, the worst car names, and the weirdest car features. There was one feature that I did forget to talk about with that. There was at one point in time where cars actually featured a record player that you could slip in a record before there were CDs and cassettes. At one point, they had an invention where you could stick in a record to play.
Yeah, I'm sure that worked great.
It sure worked great. And they also, the problem was a lot of times there were 45s, which were one song per side.
Oh, God.
So there's this picture of a guy that is, he has like, he's driving and he's got this whole pile of records next to him. Like, imagine distracted driving, people texting and driving. Imagine having this.
I think record player is much better than texting and driving.
This guy's fumbling, seeing which side of the album he wants, which album he wants, and sticking it in there, playing the album. So that was one of the features I forgot about last week.
Oh, no.
Did you guys talk about ashtrays and how they got to bring them back?
No, ashtrays were not brought up.
Okay, well, that's bullshit. That's the best feature on anything. There used to be ashtrays everywhere.
And there did. That will be something that my kid will not grow up with, which is having ashtrays in all the cars. Because you do miss that you used to see stick gum in there.
You could put whatever you want in them.
Yeah.
And the cigarette lighter. They used to have a fucking cigarette lighter.
Yeah.
And what a fun feature. As a child, you just light it up and then burn yourself.
It's basically like I'm gonna do it and then see like how close I can get to touching it without touching it, but then I end up touching it and burning myself.
Yeah. Those things were the best.
I never actually saw somebody light a cigarette with it.
I didn't either.
But it's cool how hot it glow. It was just like this red hot thing. I loved it.
Yeah, it was wild. 90s were a wild time.
Exactly. Well, yeah, it was all the years prior. They had you know, ashtrays and no seatbelts at one point. So that was a wild
safety
time
first.
As well. Safety first. That's right. So, Steve, you were gone in Virginia, North Carolina area.
Yep. I was down there mainly just fishing around, doing some fishing. I gained a new respect for fly fishermen because I went with my brother and his friend, Nate Dogg, former guest on the show.
Yeah, they've been on the show before.
The Fly Boys. It was the Fly Boys episode.
It was episode 315.
Yeah, episode 315. Yeah, we went, they took me on the river. They have this little boat with oars and shit, and we like floated down a river in Appalachia. And Nick hooked a gigantic trout that they fought for 20 minutes. And it was a coordinated two-man boat and rod guy effort. And
that's
I was
impressive.
Sitting in the back. I was just golf clapping at all the maneuvers they were doing.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah, that was wild. And, I mean, I had three fish hooked and lost every single one of them.
I didn't ask for this.
Worst is when you get it right to the water and then the line breaks or something.
Yeah. But yeah, I also, I watched the eclipse down there. You see any of the eclipse?
I did not. I just stepped outside for a little bit and it was just got kind of dark in Chicago. It didn't get full dark. It kind of just looked like a cloud went over.
That was basically what it was in, where was I? In North Carolina that day.
Yeah.
And then me and my sister, Chubbs Up Lake Gaga, we see how many pairs of sunglasses you had to stack on top of each other to create adequate sun blocking.
Yes.
When looking directly at the sun.
What was the amount?
The amount was 5.
Okay.
So 4, it's still going to burn a little.
Okay.
5, 3 is just not enough. 5, like, you can stare at the sun and view the eclipse. I'm assuming 6 would have probably been a little bit safer.
Sure.
But yeah, I did. I'm pretty sure I suffered some permanent vision damage. Like, I feel like I need reading glasses after that one.
Yeah, I did do a quick glance through the tinted sunroof of my car. That does not help, turns out.
No. Yeah, I was trying to look at it just like squinting at first. And I was like, this isn't working out. So then we just started finding all the pairs of sunglasses. Luckily, I had 3 in my car.
Why could 3?
Well, I have 1 for the passenger in case
they want sunglasses. Okay. Oh, yes. You're right.
And then I have 1 for me. And then I left a pair at my dad's house at some point. So he gave those back to me. So luckily, I had 3.
Yeah, they did actually specifically say not to wear multiple pairs of sunglasses. Like, that's not going to cut it. But they didn't say.
Really?
I mean, at a certain point, I actually did see something that said that.
Like
at a certain point, it's like, there's got to be, like you said, 5. They're not expecting you to do 5. 5 will do it. You're fine.
Yeah, they were thinking like 2
or
something.
Yeah, no, 5 works.
5. Yeah, I mean, I looked at that thing. I got a good picture on my phone of the eclipse, too, through the 5 pairs.
through the glasses.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, there was a lot of people standing outside, like around me and stuff like that. And it was not worth the view from where we're at.
No, you got to be in totality. I'm a totality survivor of the last one.
Okay.
I lived in Kansas for the 2017 one. And even that one, I remember the next day my eyes were just burning.
Because you didn't have the right glasses either.
Well, in totality, you don't need any glasses because the whole sun's covered. But at 99%, when it seems really totality, you're just staring at a thin sliver of sun, and that burns your eyeballs still.
Yeah, it's cool that we've had 2 like that recently.
So I looked it up, and there's eclipses like every 2 years. Like total eclipses. But they're just not in America.
Oh, got it.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah, that is bullshit.
Because like,
unpatriotic.
It is really. Like, the next one is in like Spain and Iceland or some shit.
Notice me, senpai. Notice me.
And then the next one, I think, is like over the ocean.
Okay.
Because like most of them are over the ocean because 75% of the surface is ocean. But if you really want to see an eclipse, like you're bummed you didn't get in totality, you're seeing the cool videos, hop on a plane. Go to Spain. Hop on a jet ski. Go into the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. Bird up. Hello. All right. Steve, I'm going to talk about a terrible war. You're a veteran, but you're not a veteran of this war. So I'm going to explain you this war, and I don't think you're familiar with it.
Uh-oh.
But if you are, this is one of the strangest wars in history. This is a Chubb history right here.
Blood alone moves the wheels of history.
Have you ever asked yourselves in an hour of meditation, which everyone finds during the day, how long we have been striving for greatness?
Some men just want to watch the world burn.
America is the richest, most powerful nation on earth. If America was a woman, America would be a big titty woman. And everybody loves a big titty woman.
In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world.
and you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chubb history.
Please clap.
Steve, in 1932 in Australia.
The Emu War?
The Emu War. You're familiar with it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, look at that. What do I know? What do I know? I assume a lot of people listening are not, so I'm going to explain what the Emu War was to those that are not. So basically, this is post-World War One, kind of Great Depression era, and there are a lot of World War One veterans that are like struggling to find work. A big part
recession.
Of the economy.
Like a recession.
Big, well, yeah, there's a recession going on. A big part of the economy is growing wheat and growing crops. And there is a problem with these 20,000 migrating emus. These emus are kind of like they breed and then they all migrate together. And they're hurting all these poor farmers' crops. Like they're like, things are going shitty as it is. And then we've got these emus like eating our crops or, you know, whatever. We're just sleeping like in them.
Thousands and thousands of emus.
That's
just
what's always
troll through.
Yeah. Every time you see like these crazy videos of Australia, it's never just like one crazy spider. It's like the one where there's all of a sudden just like 1,000 spiders covering somebody's house.
Yeah. Like, huh. Okay.
Picture that, but with emus are just like migrating, herding everywhere, just like the wave of them.
Instead of like Canadian geese.
Yes. Yes. That we get in like Chicago area.
Swarm of emus.
Emus, yeah. Which sound fun. Like, I would want to try to ride them or something, but I think they're mean.
I would definitely try to ride one. They are apparently really, like, dickhead birds.
Yeah. Well, all birds are, for the most part. So the government, at one point, this is in 1932, they decide, hey, why don't we use some of these military personnel we have? Give them a bunch of guns. Give them a bunch of ammunition. You guys can just go kill all these emus because they're a problem for the farmers.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
First of all, that is like, when you talk about nowadays, like they have all the conservation things like this. This is like every single conservation effort has basically been a result of somebody in the last 200 years just making like a broad, you know, proclamation like this. It was just like, oh, we had to kill the buffalo. The buffalo are a problem, or, you know, fuck the, like we talked about the beavers, like screw the beavers. And now there has to be conservation things. This is just like, let's kill these emus. We got some bored veterans that know how to shoot guns. And
yeah, they're eating all our corn.
Yeah, they're all our corn. So let's go kill them.
Yeah.
So they send out a bunch of, like I said, a bunch of these military guys. The problem is that they're just really unsuccessful is the most ridiculous thing with this. So you would think you've got this unarmed bird and you've got a bunch of, you know, trained military guys. This should be pretty easy.
They gave him like a Jeep with a mounted machine gun too.
Yeah. Yeah. They had some like of the time, some like technologically fine stuff, right? This is the stuff used to kill other people that were also armed at some point. Right. But they find it really difficult to kill them. Yeah. Basically they shot 10,000 rounds and killed 986.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good, but it's an unarmed thing that doesn't really know you're...
It's a bird. Yeah, but yeah, how big is the emu? Read the emu stats, because they're pretty freaking
okay, pull some emu
gigantic.
Stats. Yeah.
And they're heavy, and I guess they're really hard to, like, they just eat bullets and are like, I'm a big dumb
bird. That's what they said. There's 2,500 that they said were wounded and probably later died from injuries. They were saying they were approximately killing like 100 emus per week. The problem was that the media was just bashing the government for doing this. They're like, what the hell are you doing? Like, this is ridiculous. They end up killing more. Like, there was a few thousand that ended up being killed. I'm finding some other things about this. But it was like a very small dent in the overall population. It really made zero effect, and it just made people look stupid. People later called this guy named George Pierce. He was the minister of the Emu Wars. Like, you know, one of those things that like gets stuck on your, this guy works for, you know, 50 years, and then all he's remembered for is basically
starting an Emu War.
Yeah,
war against emus.
Yep. Okay, so they have a length of 55 to 65 inches, so around 6 feet.
A length or a height?
Well, this is the length. So, I mean, length is their height, right?
Like tail to head? Tail to beak?
They can reach up to 60 to 75 inches in height. Just, yeah, they're in the 5 to 6 feet range.
Okay.
And they weigh between 40 and 132 pounds on average.
Oh, I thought they'd be heavier.
Yeah, but you remember birds are like always kind of light. They're always way lighter than you think they are.
So cage match, I think I could take one.
132, 6 foot, 132, I think you could take.
Yeah, because I mean my stats, I'm 6 foot 1 1/4, and
yeah.
I'm pushing like 190 right now.
Yeah, you have more muscle mass. I think they're quick. They've got like some sharp talons, and they've got quick, like the pecking ability is fast.
But they don't know how to like execute an arm bar.
No, I think you'd be fine once you got to the part where you're.
I'd have to get side control or something.
Exactly. This is a boxing match. You're in trouble, but you're like, you know, UFC style. Like you can grapple them. You're done. They're done. You're set.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll have to set that up.
Yeah. Quick. Quick little update on Emu War.
So the Emu won.
The Emu. Yeah. Basically, man versus Emu. Emu won. They found it not worth the amount of resources they were using and they were getting made fun of.
Is that more of a loss for Australia than Vietnam was for the US, do you think?
I would say no, because of the loss of life of the Australian soldiers. There was basically none.
You say basically.
I think they said they think that some of the guys might have gotten injured or something, but I didn't see any confirmed deaths. Where Vietnam definitely had a lot of American deaths, so that was definitely way worse. Well, the fact that you've heard about this and this happened, you know, 90 years ago.
I hear about a lot of 90-year-old things.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
Stock market, Wall Street crashed. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was nuts.
That was bad. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Hoover.
Herbert Hoover. Yeah. Bad president.
I always think that it's J. Edgar Hoover that was the president.
No, he was the
CIA guy.
CIA guy that tried to get the gangsters.
Yeah, but I always mix those two up. So
perfect.
Eh.
All right, Steed. What's something we get to hear?
You want to do this Steed Science on cheese?
Yes, let's hear.
Or we could talk about the worst places to be found carrying a hammer.
Let's start with it. Okay, this is worst cases. Worst places to be found carrying a hammer. Let's do that.
Yeah. So when I was fossil hunting over the weekend, I emerged from the woods. I was basically like crawling on my hands and knees. So I'm like dirty as shit.
Okay.
And I'm like scratched up, and I pop out of the woods onto this trail, and there's two girls standing there.
Okay.
And I'm just carrying my hammer.
Yeah.
Because I was fossil hunting.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Did they know you were fossil hunting?
They knew. They were also fossil hunting.
Okay. Okay.
Because I talked to them.
Yes.
And they were in fear. They were scared.
They were a little scared.
It was their first time.
Oh,
so they didn't
have
a hammer. I had a hammer.
Yeah.
I was in control.
I see. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So that's a pretty bad place to like run into somebody that's carrying a hammer. Just in the middle of the woods.
Middle of the woods, your first time there, bad spot.
Yeah. So then I thought, like, what other places would be bad if, like, you're there and then somebody just pops out and they have a hammer?
Mm-hmm.
Parking garage.
Parking garage is, yeah, that's always, yeah, why would you, exactly.
That's bad. Because, I mean, you go to park cars, but if you see somebody in there, they're up to no good, no matter what.
Yeah.
I don't know why you always have to be on alert in a parking garage.
For sure. Cause it's like, it feels, I think a parking garage is weird because you feel like there should be a bunch of people. Cause you know, people are going to come back to these cars at some point. So you kind of have this false sense of security, but also it's like big and empty. So a lot of times you could be there completely by yourself, even though it has the potential to have hundreds of people there. It's a weird, like in between where you don't know if you could get away with something, if somebody could do something, you would hear it or not or whatever, right? It's kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah, they're scary. So that's high up on my hammer fear list. Here's a fun one. Hospital.
Yes. Good one. Good one.
But you just you're in your room and some guy walks in and he's got a hammer. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when you're picturing hammer, you're just picturing like a classic, Yeah.
Mine is actually scarier because it has a big spike on the back end.
Okay.
Breaking rocks open. So it's got like a long, like 6-inch
sure.
spiky thing.
Yeah.
So it could do some damage.
Okay. So it could be, yeah. Or a big framing hammer is kind of scary.
Yeah. Basically any type of hammer.
Okay.
I guess in your house, if you're sitting there and Paul shows up and
Paul's got a hammer. Yeah.
But I'm just looking for fossils.
Sure, sure, sure.
They could I couldn't be anywhere. Find any in the woods.
Exactly.
And now I need to look here.
Now, if somebody's dressed like a construction worker and they have this hammer, are you less nervous about it?
I might be more nervous because then they're just trying to blend in.
I see.
Like, they're even crazier if they're in the hospital with the hammer.
Yes, that's fair. That's fair. Sauna?
Oh, God.
Sometimes? Like, if you're, yeah, like, in a hotel, like say you're a hotel sauna and you're in there by yourself and some guy walks in with a hammer.
Yeah, that I wouldn't like that. Because no. Those rooms seem soundproof.
They do. They do. There's a lot of insulation to keep the heat in and stuff. So They seem like they should be soundproof as well.
Oh man. And the heat would destroy the evidence, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't maybe.
How about on a roller coaster?
Oof. Perfect crime.
Yeah.
Because all they got to do is like toss it up in the air, let the hammer do the work.
It's gone. It wasn't them, it was gravity.
Basically anywhere is bad.
Yeah, almost anywhere except for a construction site. This would be a bad spot to see somebody with a hammer. That's fair, Steve. That's fair. These girls, after you explained yourself that you were not there to hurt them, they were fine with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, because of the implication.
Exactly. Exactly.
They were going to be okay with it.
Because of the implication.
I hear
you. We had a pleasant chat, and then I bowed. And I respectfully went on my way.
Did you bow facing them the whole time? Like, did you back up facing them the whole time?
Oh, I never turned my back on them.
Oh, good. Good.
Because I didn't know what they were up to.
Exactly. Exactly.
You want to do steed science now?
Yeah, let's do the steed science.
Everything in this world is made up of matter. And those matters behave with each other in certain ways. And that, students, is chemistry. Everything in this world is made up of matter. And those different matters behave amongst each other in different ways. And that, children,
is steed science.
Alrighty, so this was Chub Daddy? What's his Chub Step name?
Chub Daddy.
Chub Daddy. This is a Chub Daddy request. He was confused about cheese.
Yeah, so he wanted a steed science on cheese. And don't forget to email the show chubstep.podcast@gmail.com if you have other steed science or chub history requests or things like that.
Yeah, if you have a project at school or something.
Yeah, if you want Steve to do your project at school, you go reference him.
I'll spark notes it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was confused because, like, you go to the store and there's some cheese, all from a cow, right? Cheese is made from cows.
Yes.
And some is yellow, some is white, some has, like, blue in it.
Yeah.
It's all this crazy stuff going on. So he's like, what's the deal with that?
Exactly. Yeah, there's basically cheese comes from a cow. A lot of cheese comes from a cow, but it's like, it looks completely different, tastes completely different.
Yeah. Which is good because I love cheese. So here's basically how cheese is made, like as a whole. You get your milk. It can be, you know, goat, cow, whatever. Yeah. I don't know what else makes milk. You can just take that.
You could make human milk cheese, technically, right?
I'm sure people have.
Yeah.
And I would try it.
Okay. I would have to see what the woman looked like before I was going to eat the cheese.
What does that matter?
I think...
Do you look at the cow? Do you take...
I don't have the ability to look at the cow. Here, Steve, this is a good idea. Sorry, I'm sorry to distract you from your steed science here.
No, it's okay.
If I was able to see
milk idea,
if I was able to see the cow before I ate the cheese that it was from, I think I would be able to pick like a good cheese or a bad cheese. I think there would be more vegans that would eat cheese if they could see how good looking the cow was.
Like he's just prancing around.
She. It's going to be a she, by the way. It's not a he.
You don't know that.
I do.
You don't know how they identify.
Yeah. So I'm picturing, but if it's like an ugly cow, I don't know if I want to eat that cheese. And that's maybe sexist of me.
I think it is.
Okay.
I mean, look, if it's like, I don't know, if it looks sad, I might not want to eat it.
Yeah, sure. Sad. I wouldn't know there'd be some effort going into this. Like, I guess if we're doing this with human milk, right? Mm-hmm. Would you rather have like a bodybuilder give you better breast milk to make cheese?
Yeah, like versus, more protein.
That's what I'm wondering.
It's a good question.
Or would you want somebody who's like a hippie who, like, you know, their body is a temple type of thing in the other sense of, like, you know, they're free and they're not taking any.
Well, it's just like
hormone weak, things or things like that. So
weak looking little bitch boy. Yeah, no, I want the alpha milk.
That's what I'm saying. So I would like to pick my cheeses based on either the human, if this were human cheese, or the cow.
Yeah, if it's like a sheep or whatever. Cow.
Yeah, whatever this goat or whatever it is. I'd like to see the animal it's coming from.
Is sheep cheese a thing? I don't know. We'll get into it.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Take you off topic here, but continue with your cheese.
We got some business ideas this week.
I know. That's a problem. That's a problem. And we're giving away for free right now. So,
yes, 10%. Okay. Yeah. So cheese gets made. Basically, you heat the milk. This is important.
Okay.
You take the milk, you heat it up. Then you add some type of starter culture, and that's going to acidify it. That's going to convert the milk sugar to lactic acid. Then you got to add some type of like enzyme. This is where, you know, it can get a little crazy. You can add the enzyme or rennet.
Okay.
Or like bacteria or mold sometimes. And then this is going to make the milk coagulate when you add this stuff. And it's going to form cheese curds. And this is where the fun cheese curds come in. You go to Wisconsin, you get these things. They just take the curds. That's what they eat.
Yeah.
They don't like cut, stir, heat, and drain the curds to remove whey. They take more whey out of it.
Okay. So
this finished cheese, I guess, has less protein.
The cheese curds have more protein?
I think so.
Okay.
And then, so after you like, you know, stir it up and shit and get your texture right, then you add you can add salt. You shape it, you ripen it, and then you can, this is where you would also add like mold if you're going for like a blue cheese type deal. So good. And then, you know, you create a lot of different flavors or characteristics in the finishing and aging, because aging has a lot to do with it. So you got the milk, you boil the milk, you add some type of enzyme to coagulate it. Then you like stir it and shit. And then you add your final stuff and then age it. Okay, so that's cheese. The most common enzyme, I guess this is the classic enzyme, is called rennet. And this is a bunch of enzymes that are produced in the stomachs of ruminant mammals.
Okay, that's gross. So they have to get these enzymes out of mammals somehow, and then they put it into cheese?
Out of mammals' tummies.
Oh, God.
It comes from the stomachs of young goats, calves, and lambs that only eat milk.
Okay.
So once they start to eat grass, the enzyme disappears.
Oh.
They extract it as part of a livestock butchering. So,
oh, God. Okay. So they butcher these animals, the ones that have only been fed milk.
Little babies.
Okay.
And then you get to make cheese. no, there's a modern method. Yeah, it's not. They're not just whacking all these.
But that, I was assuming so, because like back in the day, that is probably what they did, though.
Yeah. No, I think at this point, it's basically just called rennet. And then.
It's a chemical.
Yeah, it's like they manufacture it.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's an enzyme. They help speed up chemical reactions. That's their job. So let's go over like a couple big name cheeses.
Sure.
We got American cheese.
Yeah. That's like fake cheese, isn't it?
Yeah, this one is technically not cheese, yeah, according to the FDA.
Yeah.
So I don't think I will ever eat American cheese again.
Yeah.
It was actually made, like, you know, you think American cheese, you think Kraft. And this was, like, made by Norman Kraft, James Kraft's brother. Okay. I guess James Kraft was the businessman. Norman Kraft was the cheeseman in the family.
Okay.
So, yeah, they, like, invented this cheese, and it's less than 51% real cheese.
Okay. And so, that's why it can just, like, shelf life's insane on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was made in, 1916, 90 years ago. Another big cheese, Asiago cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Are you an Asiago fan?
I like Asiago. Yeah, eat it a ton, but the only time I ever feel like I see it is on breads or bagels. Yeah, but I don't know.
It's a big bread cheese. This one was made in 1500. Cattle farming bypassed sheep farming in some regions of Italy, and then the Italians are like, "Well, we still want cheese, but we can't use the sheep milk anymore. So let's use this cow milk." And then they started, they would get the curd, press the curd into a mold, put a bunch of salt on it, and then age it for no more than 40 days. And then bam, you got an Asiago cheese made by Asiago de Alevo.
Oh, mamma mia.
That's the spot where it's from in Italy?
I think that's the guy's name.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Okay, a brie cheese.
Yeah, those are kind of crazy cheese. Hard rind on the outside, and then soft, kind of
real
tangy.
Tasty, good to bake. Nice baked brie out of this world. So for a cheese to be a brie cheese, it needs 60 to 75% butter fat made entirely from cow's milk.
Okay.
So brie cheese basically just has a super high fat content.
Okay.
And if you do buy a brie cheese, you want to store it at room temperature rather than refrigerating it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
You want to keep its unique consistency with the oozy interior and the spongy exterior.
Okay, because I usually keep it in the fridge, but then when I'm serving it, I'll let it sit out for 2 to 3 hours.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, you're fine with that?
I'm okay with that. Okay. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, this cheese actually has bacteria in it. It's got penicillium candidum in it.
I know some of these words.
Cottage cheese. This is a fun one.
Cottage cheese. Yeah.
Yeah. This, you get 28 grams of protein for every 163 calories. That's huge.
Yes.
This one, remember last one you added a bunch of salt? This one you add acidic milk to separate the curds and the whey. And then the small curds are washed, and then you put salt in them.
Weird. So just like,
so you're eating those salt, small little curds.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody's doing like acidic. So I'm assuming this was made with like sour, like older milk.
Well, like, and or buttermilk. Like, I kind of think like buttermilk is kind of an acidic milk.
Some guy was like, tastes good, bro.
Yeah, throw that in there. My great aunt once told my great uncle that only fat people eat cottage cheese. We were sitting at breakfast with her, and he wanted some cottage cheese, and she told him only fat people like cottage cheese.
Yeah, I mean, it's really high. So it's like, if you eat a bunch of cottage cheese, you'll gain weight.
Yeah, I like cottage cheese, but
it has 28 grams of protein per 163 calories, but that's probably like, you know, 2 spoonfuls. And then you're just like, all right, so that's whatever, 160 calories and 2 spoonfuls. So you eat 20 spoonfuls. Then you just got like 1,000 calories and half your breakfast.
Is cottage cheese also kind of white trash? I like cottage cheese. I like the taste of it, but I can't picture like it being very fancy. Just don't picture fine dining with cottage cheese.
They could do it.
I'm not saying they can't do it. I just picture it as low class.
It would probably taste so good.
I agree. I just think it's low class. And I think if you were realizing we used to do classiest to trashiest cheeses, you know, one of the classiest things would be probably like brie is pretty classy. If you're doing like cheese wise, like a brie is classy. A cottage cheese is not, it's trashy. It's a trashy cheese.
Yeah. Well, that's because they serve it in a tub.
I think that's the problem. I think it's the serving device. You're right, Steve. It comes in a, anything comes in a tub is not fancy. If it came in like a glass jar, you know, with some gold cap on it, not a mason jar, but like a fancy thing that you had to pop a seal and it, you know, then cottage cheese helped its image a little bit, but maybe we need a rebrand of cottage cheese. But you're right. I think the fact that anything comes in a tub, what could be fancy in a tub? Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. If caviar came in a tub, it would be out.
Yeah.
Okay. One more cheese just so we cover a moldy one. Gorgonzola cheese. You're a Gorgonzola boy? Gorgonzola.
Yeah. I don't have Gorgonzola. I feel like it's not an option many times. I feel like blue cheese is much more popular.
Yeah, Gorgonzola is like a classy blue cheese.
It is like a, it's a good point. It is a classy blue cheese. That's a good way to put it.
It is more mild than blue cheese. But this one actually originated outside of Milan, Italy. So very high class from Gorgonzola. Nice. Large quantity still made in Milan or right outside of Milan. This is a cow milk inoculated with another penicillium genus of mold, just like the brie. But this one is a different penicillium, so it puts a little bit of blue in it.
It's scary that you can eat this stuff. I mean, it is crazy looking. We feel like a cool gorgonzola looks like marble, like it's got like these veins of blue through it. It is scary that that's like something that's just like okay to eat. I don't know like how many mold related things people tried before they're just like, oh yeah, this one's okay to eat and this one's like just gonna get you sick.
1500s in the year 1500 cheese farmers were like, just grab some of that mold in the corner, boy.
I know.
Put it in the cheese.
You assume this had to have happened by accident.
I'm assuming that the mold was probably like in their bowls or some shit that they were like mixing it in. And then it was like, oh, we make the best cheese. It's blue. And then eventually science came around and they're like, you guys are lucky.
Yeah, you guys got really lucky on this one. This actually is just mold. But it's somehow okay to eat, so
yeah, it's good ass mold. You did it.
But it is a that's a very classy cheese. Burger Gorgonzola is up there, fancy name too.
Yeah, I'm looking at so many. Gosh darn, I got 35 cheeses on this website. Oh my god, I want to just go buy so much cheese.
Yeah, cheese is not cheap though. That's the problem with cheese.
North Korea's a dictator. He got gout from eating too much fine cheese. Kim Jong-un.
Aren't a lot of people in Korea, Japan, kind of like Eastern Asia, a lot of them are lactose intolerant, right?
I don't know.
Okay. I believe that is the case. I could be generalizing here, but
I did not offer milk to any of them. But I know you would have been drinking out of your tub of milk and said, hey, are you thirsty?
Yeah.
Then you would have gotten it.
Exactly. But if you look at East Asian food, there none of it has cheese. And it's not like they didn't have cows. It's not like there wasn't cows in Japan.
I don't think there were cows in Japan.
But there have been cows. Okay. There's as many beef dishes.
Now there's cows in Japan.
But there's how many cheese dishes. How many you go to Chinese takeout, how many of those dishes have, you know, cheese in them? You go to get sushi or Japanese takeout.
Zero.
The answer is zero. So they have, you know, obviously haven't either. It's something that the way it affects their bodies or just doesn't fit well with any cheese can go with anything. So I disagree that it can't go with this. So
I had mozzarella on a hot dog yesterday.
Didn't love that.
No, it kind of ruined it for me.
But some cheese on a hot dog's good. Like chili cheese dog's good.
Not good enough for a chili cook-off.
too soon. That's fair. All right. We'll wrap it up there. People email the show, chubstepdadpodcast@gmail.com. Rate the show on Spotify. Check us out on YouTube. We got a new YouTube banner, Steve. I don't know if you saw this. I added some new stuff to YouTube.
I go on there and like all our videos all the time.
Good. You're the only one because...
No, we usually get a couple.
We have 100 times more listeners on the audio side than the video side, but I think the video side is fun. So people check it out, YouTube, also Instagram, Chubstep Podcast. And episodes every Thursday. The show has ended. Be gone.
Now you know you got to go.
Peace. This is Yasin.